Joel Mabus is a guitarist, banjoist, and singer-songwriter with West Michigan roots, and a beloved status in the folk music world. He can be heard in festivals and folk clubs across the country, and occasionally on Garrison Keillor's A Prairie Home Companion. Joel Mabus is my guest tonight on WMUK's Let's Hear It, live from the Yoshimi Takeda Performance Studio, playing songs from his most recent CD, Pepper's Ghost and Other Banjo Visitations. It's the latest of over 20 albums by Joel Mabus. On it, he sings and plays a variety of sometimes spirited, sometimes haunted songs and tunes, including a once-famous melody by a forgotten composer named Thurlow Lawrence. I'm Kara Lawrence, and I hope you stick around for Joel Mabus on WMUK's Let's Hear It. Well, Joel, it seems like it wasn't quite a year ago that we were sitting here talking about a parlor guitar Christmas.
Yeah, it was right at the end of last year, and here we are again at the end, almost the end of this year.
Do you always have the next album kind of cooking in your head?
Well, I always have. By the time I'm finished with one project, I kind of know what the other one's next one's going to be. In the case of since last year, I actually had two that I wanted to do, and they were neck and neck for a while. This banjo album that I came out with was one of them. The other is a blues album that's mostly original stuff. And I had a little window of time to record, and I thought, which one is ready to cook? And it was the banjo album. That was the one that was speaking to me first. So I got into the studio in August to record what I'd been working on with the banjo. And things tumbled out pretty quick. So I said, well, I could get this out before Halloween. So that's what happened.
And here we are with Pepper's Ghost and
Pepper's Ghost.
Other Banjo Visitations.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the work you did on this album also went into some program notes that really you do hang a lot of things together on the sense of old voices and old presences coming through.
When you make your first album, and for me that would have been 30-something, almost 40 years ago, the theme of that album is, hey world, listen to me. And you put everything you can do on the album, and it's that tends to be what first albums are about. And for a while, you show the world what you got working, and whatever it is, if it's disparate or if it's one idea, that's what you work on. And as you make more what I could think of as packages, these albums, I can decide what goes in and what doesn't go in to each one. And with Pepper's Ghost, I had the idea to do a banjo album. That was first, was to have me and this banjo that I got a little over a year ago that has a nice deep sound and it's good to sing with. And and then you look for, like, what hangs together here? What makes a statement with this thing? And I had this tune that I was working on that it was a little two-part, what we often call fiddle tunes, even if there's no fiddle involved. In this case, it's a banjo tune for sure. But it had no title, and I was just, I let it come to me. What am I going to call this? And somehow, on some meanderings on the World Wide Web, I came across the term used in some article, Pepper's Ghost. And I said, what the heck is that? Capital P, capital G, Pepper's Ghost. Never heard of that. So I Googled it, put it into Google, and found out it was something I should have known about all my life. Pepper's Ghost is an old theatrical trick. It's an illusion, an optical illusion, and I can't describe it on the radio very well, but you know the expression smoke and mirrors, that it's all just smoke and mirrors. Well, there's no smoke involved with Pepper's Ghost, but there is a pane of glass that will work as either a mirror or a transparent look through. And with it and some lights, you turn the lights on here, turn the lights off there, it can actually make a 3D person or thing appear where it wasn't before on the stage. It was first done by Professor, he called himself Professor, John Henry Pepper of London, England, who used it in the 1860s in a Dickens play to make a ghost appear. Yeah, I don't think it was A Christmas Carol, but it was something like that, where a ghost shows up. And it scared people. It was just amazing. And his name has been attached to it ever since. But it's the same optics. They use it in Disneyland right now with their haunted house. Magicians have used it for years. It doesn't involve projections. It just involves lighting and something that reflects. It used to be glass. Now they use plexiglass. And it's the same thing you see when a politician gives a speech, that tilted plane of plexiglass. The politician is reading a teleprompter image shot up to it, but we see right straight through it. It's the same optics as that. So Pepper's ghost. And this tune I had was, that reminded me of the tune when I read about Pepper's ghost, because the tune has two sections and a few little themes that show up. And then all of a sudden in the second half, a theme from the first half shows up where it doesn't belong. It makes sense when you hear it, but if you're trying to place it, it's like most tunes have a call and an answer and a call and an answer. And sometimes the answer shows up as an answer to a different call in the second half. And that's not the case here. Let me play it for you. And we'll you can see if you think Pepper's Ghost is a good name for this little tune here.
Original tune by Joel Mabus, my guest here at WMUK, and that's called Pepper's Ghost.
Pepper's Ghost, yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a spooky tune exactly, but no, there's something unsettled.
Well, it's in a minor key, so to speak, the Dorian mode, which is a minor third sort of thing. But it goes, it reflects back and forth between the minor and the major. The minor goes to it, oh, it's not minor, it's major. Oh, but it resolved on a minor. And then the B part, it does the same thing kind of almost in reverse, all of which is this mirror stuff. There's a couple of Irish tunes hidden in there. That first phrase is almost like the beginning of Drowsy Maggie, which is a popular old short tune in Irish music. And the B part is a little bit like Buttermilk Hill. Just those few notes, but it sets that theme, Buttermilk Hill, about it has a variety of titles about Johnny's Gone for a Soldier. In America, that's how it's usually called. And I thought, well, those two tunes sort of complement each other in a way, Drowsy and Saying Goodbye, you know, whatever. But I didn't have words for it, so there's no lyric intent to any of this. It's just those two. And there was the title waiting for me, Behind a Pane of Glass, Pepper's Ghost. And then that led to the idea for the album. I said, well, it's an intriguing title, so it might be an intriguing title for an album. And then I started looking at the other tunes. I mentioned in my online notes that, you know, I could have made Joel's Big Old Bucket of Banjo Tunes, because I have 20 or 30 tunes I've not recorded that I'd love to record someday and play. But I thought, well, let's, you know, make this a little more interesting listening experience to the general public or someone who's at least amenable to acoustic music and not just banjo tunes. So I had a few songs that I had written or working on. I have a couple of old story songs on this collection that are ancient tunes that have showed up as songs sometimes. And I had sort of rewritten them from a particular vantage point of view, changed the melodies a bit, so those show up on there as well. And then I started thinking, what is a ghost? What is a spirit? You know, we have these names we toss around a lot, like what is the spirit of America? What is the spirit of team spirit? The spirit of laughter? The Holy Spirit? Right? All these things. What does that really mean? It's from the old Greek word of the inspire. To inspire means to breathe in. So the breath of things, wind, all these things. And so those themes resonate on a bunch of different songs on this album, wind and spirit and breath. And what is it when people depart? Where do they go? You know, that's the number one question for the ages there. And that's tackled a little bit in an old hymn towards the end, and the story of the guy who wrote it. So it comes together as a collection. You know, as a musician, it's a performing musician getting on stage. One of my jobs is to put together a set, as we call them in the business. What's a good thing to start with? What's a good thing to follow the thing that starts? How are you going to end it up? What comes in between? And there's a bit of an art to that. It's certainly not a science. It's just a feeling of what flows into one thing from another.
There's a lot of considerations, from what kind of memory you'll be using to, you know, the feel mm-hmm. of the song. And
yeah, the key it's in, yeah. The tempo, the beat. The thing about clawhammer banjo that I think a lot of people miss unless they've listened to it for a while, as opposed to the other brands of banjo playing that are out there. It has a very intricate and detailed rhythmic structure. And part of this is the fact that you're using this, it's an African instrument originally, and you play it in the clawhammer way, clawhammer being the tag we use these days for it, where it's a downstroke and an upstroke, and the upstroke plays the offbeat in a particular way. And if you play a melody note with that offbeat thumb coming away from the banjo, it has a different attack. Now, the bluegrass style is a finger-picking style, much more European-influenced, and all the notes are, in most bluegrass players, seamlessly coming at you as a stream of 16th notes. and interrupted with a few eighth notes here and there. And it can get some really neat effects that way, but the Clawhammer banjo has a lot more texture to it. And I paid really close attention to that with this album and with other collections. So there's a couple of things in here that are marches that have a real different flavor than a breakdown, which is lickety split, fast as you can play kind of thing, and some of the more intricate slower pieces that take syncopation to a whole different level than in say bluegrass or the plectrum style of playing that you see in jazz music and other styles that borrow from the guitar.
If you've just tuned in, you're lucky enough to be listening to West Michigan's own Joel Mabus, and we're live in the Yoshimi Takeda Performance Studio at WMUK, looking at his latest project, just on CD, called Pepper's Ghost and Other Banjo Visitations. You were describing Clawhammer-style banjo, and layered is one way one word that comes to mind, and in the way you can voice low, middle, and high textures to give yourself a lot. It's like its own string quartet in a way.
Well, yeah, it's a five-string instrument. Well, any multi-stringed instrument that's played, whether it's a lute or a guitar or other, there's a harp-like aspect to it. So in the five-string banjo, it's like you have five voices, and they each have their range, and they work together well, and sometimes you play them all as a unit, but sometimes you play them separately or just in tandem with each other. So in a lot of ways, it's like having a barbershop quartet here with these main four strings and then the little sidecar on the side that chimes in once in a while. And sometimes it's light and rhythmic, and sometimes it's a strong punch. So this tune... you had a Kara Lawrence, my interviewer here today, had a big part in this because after last year when I was here, we talked about parlor guitar in its Christmas mode, and I had done the earlier album, straight parlor guitar of old tunes from 100 years ago, give or take a decade, and you mentioned. In an email or in passing, if I ever do any more of those, I might take a look at a tune that your great-grandfather composed back in that period. He published it a few times with different, once as a piano piece, once as a song, but roughly around, 1911 or so. And it's with the title of By the Waters of Minnetonka. And that title did ring a bell with me, but I couldn't place the tune. I had to go look it up and listen to it again. And I did try it on the guitar, and I tried it when you're arranging something for an instrument like the guitar, you try it in different keys to see what's amenable to the tune and what presents itself. And I got a decent fingerstyle version of it on the guitar, but it wasn't making me do cartwheels. But I had the tune in my head, and I was really fond of the second half of it, which sort of works as a bridge in the tune. And then I just tried it on the banjo one day and thought, wow, this just falls right into place here. And I played it more and more on the banjo. And when I got to thinking of tunes for this album, I thought, well, it'd be fun to do that because I've never heard anybody else play this on the banjo. And that surprises me. I'd think someone would. And then when I started thinking of my little ghost theme that was the in the background here, this is an old song. Now, you can fill me in on the details if you like, but your great-grandfather's name was Thurlow Lawrence. And he was a mover in the Indianist movement, much as in the way that someone like Aaron Copland took old American fiddle tunes and worked them into things like Rodeo. Your great-grandfather took a little Edison cylinder recorder out to Indian reservations and got people playing flute tunes and singing songs. And this particular one was sung by a singer, a Sioux singer, who was living on the Crow Reservation in Montana, who sang this song. And it involved, for lack of a better phrase, it was the Romeo and Juliet story from the Sioux tribe. Star-crossed lovers within the Sioux tribe, but from different clans, Sun Deer and Moon Deer. Sun Deer was the man and Moon Deer was the woman. Fell in love, but those two clans, Sun and Moon, were forbidden to intermarry. So they ran away, lovers ran away, and found a big lake. And Minnetonka means big lake.
That's helpful. So,
by the waters of the big lake is basically what this means. Where they had their honeymoon of sorts away from their tribe, but the enemies of the Sioux, the Ojibwe or Chippewa, camped on the other side of the lake, and they knew that they were done for one way or the other. They couldn't go home. They couldn't go forward. So they jumped into the lake, and the lovers packed and committed suicide in the water. And then years later, many moons later, however you'd like to say it, the Sioux tribe came across the lake and defeated the Chippewa, and they heard the lover's song coming off the water. And that's the story that the song tells, as was sung in the Sioux language. And later, those lyrics translated to English were imposed on the tune, but the first thing your great-grandfather did was compose it for piano, and he used a lot of rippling arpeggios to get out a very basic melody of that's the basic theme of the tune. It's pentatonic, major pentatonic, very simple.
You could play it on an Indian flute.
You could play it on a flute for sure, a five-hole flute would be all it would take. And it's beautiful just as that. But what Thurlow Lawrence did was take that tune and, as he said in his notes, put it in a way that modern ears could hear it. Listen to it with, and especially that shows up in the bridge or the B part of the tune with some really wonderful chord choices. And the banjo, being a set of arpeggios right from the get-go, fits right into this. And what I was talking about earlier, the multi-layered rhythmic things that happen, well, let me just play it. Why don't we just play it and people can decide if they like it or not. This is By the Waters of Minnetonka by Thurlow Lawrence. Thank you.
Well, now I can retire a happy announcer, having introduced you to that tune.
Well, thank you so much.
And that's not the tune I'm used to, the way I'm used to hearing it at all. That's
sure. It's been recorded by opera singers, you know.
Right.
And jazz piano players have done it. And I mean, you name it, it's been recorded one way or another. And it simplifies it a little bit to take it back to this banjo, which is half drum, half lute. And it's called clawhammer style because you hammer on the strings with your claws. And that's that percussive attack with the right hand that that really brings the folk instrument to life in this, because if you're playing clawhammer banjo, anybody who plays this style knows half your job is target practice. You're taking your hand from a few inches away and throwing it down with one nail going to hit one string just at the right place. And if you're not practiced up, that could be a whole different note than you're expecting to hit. So it's an interesting way of playing an interesting instrument. And when a tune fits it so well, I think, as that does, it just tells me, oh, you got to do this. You got to play this one for people, because it's, and people have really responded to it. A lot of folks younger than me have never heard it before. And I got to admit that one of my most indelible memory of By the Waters of Minnetonka was an episode of I Love Lucy, where Lucy's trying to break into showbiz and Ricky's going to do By the Waters of Minnetonka in full costume at the club. And she shows up with the papoose on her back and sings the female part to comic relief. Of course, it's very comically done. But and that's 60 years ago now.
I know. Well, you can. I look it up a couple times a month on YouTube.
Yeah, it'll be forever on YouTube, at least if the internet keeps going like it has. But thank you again for that. It was very serendipitous that I found that, and it was a smack in the head when I said, "It's a ghost story." You know, behind all of this
makes all the sense in the world.
Sitting Eagle singing this song to your great grandfather about ghosts.
And it's serendipity, at least in family lore, that my great-grandfather actually went to the reservation in the first place, because he'd contracted polio. Mm-hmm. So he needed a place to recover, and his brother was a doctor there, and he would never have heard these wonderful Indian melodies if he hadn't had the misfortune.
I had read that he had trouble walking all his life, and then you know, you go and you read people's stories, and I read that he had survived polio. And then some other place, no, it was a car accident. And it's like, where is the truth in history? And the internet is no help.
No.
when you have three or four stories out there, and you don't know who's telling them.
Well, either way, it'd be really tough to carry an Edison cylinder machine around when you're...
Yeah, it was a labor of love that he collected all these songs. However, what led him to that, what led me to you to tell me, to mention that song, and I came, it was just like, you know. Every song has that story, though, like you come to it some way. And, you know, as a musician, you come to things in different ways. Sometimes things are assigned to you to play, and then you fall in love with it. Sometimes you are looking for something else, and there is the tune of the love of your life and your tune world just waiting for you to discover it. And it's an interesting path.
Let's remind folks that I'm talking to Joel Mabus here at WMUK, and where can we find this new record?
Oh, you can't get it anywhere. No, actually, sales are online mostly at this point. I would, here in Kalamazoo, I will have them available at some point soon. Don't know when. At the People's Food Co-op, which sold my Christmas album last year, and I need to restock them with some new things, and this will be over there at some point. But it's available as downloads from the usual customers where you usually download things. I won't have to name their their names. They're rich enough as it is. And at my website, you can order it directly from me, which is, of course, my favorite way to sell people. And it's the only way you can get an autograph on the album, too. And that's just put my name in, Joel Mabus, and put a .com after it, and you got me. I'd like to sing a song, if I could. One of the things that I like about this particular banjo, and I know people are surprised sometimes when I say I have six or seven banjos. They say, why would you need more than one?
It brings any number of jokes to mind.
Yeah. I usually tell people it's a First Amendment thing. I have them because I can. But each one has its own voice, and this particular banjo has a little deeper, beefier voice, I guess. And it works nicely for singing, too. And one of the songs on this album that I definitely wanted to include was it isn't particularly Halloween-y unless you have that preconception about bats, that they only belong in Dracula's castle and come out at Halloween. This is an old folk song called Leatherwing Bat, and old English folk song that came to America. And I never really cared for most of the verses of this. They sounded a little too old Elizabethan-y kind of thing. And I liked the first verse pretty much intact, but then I added some other creatures of the night. I said the little leather-winged bat, I'll tell you the reason that, the reason that I fly by night. Because my love is taking flight. How come a fiddle and a diddle all day? How come a fiddle and a diddle my way? Fiddle come a diddle and a twiddle all night. Cock-a-doodle-doodle in the morning light. I said the raccoon sitting in the tree, I see you, but you don't see me. When your corn is nice and ripe, I am the thief that comes by night. How come a fiddle and a diddle all day? How come a fiddle and a diddle my way? Fiddle come a diddle and a twiddle all night. Cock-a-doodle-doodle in the morning light. I said the possum gray and white, I sleep all day and I work all night, I work all night and sleep all day, that is how I earn my pay. How come a fiddle and a diddle all day? How come a fiddle and a diddle my way? Fiddle come a diddle and a twiddle all night. Cock-a-doodle-doodle in the morning light. I said the June bug headed for the flame, all desire is the same, if I live or if I die, to that candle flame I fly. How come a fiddle and a diddle all day? How come a fiddle and a diddle my way? Fiddle come a diddle and a twiddle all night. Cock-a-doodle-doodle in the morning light. Said the little leather-winged bat, I'll tell you the reason that, the reason that I fly by night. because my love is taking flight. How can my fiddle and a diddle all day? How can my fiddle and a diddle my way? Fiddle come a diddle and a twiddle all night. Cock a doodle doodle in the morning light.
Leatherwing Bat. Joel Mabus here at WMUK. One of the features in your setting, I don't know if this is true of the tune you learned, but you did that on this song and also on another song on the album called Two Little Sisters. Sometimes you take irregular phrase lengths and use them to emphasize parts of the song, and they're not like the fiddle tunes, which is symmetrical.
I don't sing to the banjo. I let the banjo sing to me, if that makes sense. When you play a tune for a dance or just as a tune to play with other people, you tend to keep it regular. Two beats in a measure, four measures in a phrase, 16 measures in a part, and so forth and so on, nice and straight and regular. And you could play Leatherwing Bat just that way. And when I play the interstitial tune, I do that. But something I learned a long time ago, when I'm on stage telling a song, singing a song, telling a story in a song, if I think it needs a little pause, well, I just let it pause. You see, if I was singing the song a cappella, I said the little Leatherwing Bat. I tell you the reason that I fly by night, because my love is taking flight. Ding dong a ding da ding dong day, I'm da da ding da. You can do whatever you want to with your voice. Just as when we speak, sometimes we breathe, and sometimes we pause. And when I say something like two little sisters side by side, you want to be sinister. You can be sinister and let the banjo just like you would a drum. It keeps its own beat, and I keep my own phrasing. And I learned some years ago that works well. And then, of course, you listen to some of the old banjo players who sing songs, and they do the same thing. And it makes it hard to be in a band and do that, especially if you have people anticipating the next chord change or structure that comes up in the tune. Anything other than a drum beat can't accompany this. But since I am in charge of both instruments, my voice and the banjo, I can do that. And I think it, especially on telling of stories, it's to great effect, because sometimes you just need a little pause. I've learned that as a songwriter as well. And if I were to tell you a story without pausing, you wouldn't hear the story right. You know, a guy walks in a bar, and then the dog says this, and then the guy says, no, you got a guy walks in a bar, pause. And then there's this talking dog that comes in, pause. Because you gotta tell your story, your joke, your tale, your message, in little bite-sized portions, and you feed it to your audience and let them take a bite, taste it, digest it, think about what that means, and then give them the next taste. Even if that's only 2 seconds, but maybe 3 seconds is a little better. Maybe 4 seconds is just right. And with the banjo especially, and you can do it with other instruments as well, but the banjo in particular has a nice way of keeping a little background with its back and forth rhythm with these notes on the strings, that's interesting in itself, but it doesn't have to have the regular meter that we're so used to hearing in pop music and such. And it's something that kind of came with the 20th century. If you listen to the early Carter Family songs, you might notice sometimes it's in 4-4 time, but some of those measures have 3 beats, and some of them have 5 beats, but it fits the songs. Now, if you come in from the mountains and you sit down in the studio with all these studio musicians who are used to playing, and is this 2-4, 3-4, or 4-4? you know, and they're going to stick to it. You have to fit their mold and play within the confines of regular rhythm. And having this crooked rhythm, as they sometimes call it, is anathema to studio musicians, but it's part and parcel of traditional music. So I give myself the option to breathe on that, and I certainly do it on all of the story tunes on this, and that includes Leatherwing Bat. And it can be different from time to time. You know, it's I'm telling the story right now, so here's the way it is.
Well, Pepper's Ghosts and Other Banjo Visitations is available right now at joelmabus.com. And Joel, what is coming up for you in the future with this project and anything else?
Well, once I get through this season here at the end of 2013, I have part of the Singing Festival up in Lansing, Michigan in end of January, which will be fun. This is all sing-alongs, although that doesn't really give it. It isn't Mitch Millard with the bouncing ball. I'll be up on the Friday night of that festival, which is in Lansing, East Lansing, Michigan. The Friday night is, if I'm saying her name correctly, Issei Barnwell, one of the founders of Sweet Honey and the Rock, is going to be leading Friday night with African American music. And then Saturday night, I'm going to be on stage with my old friends, Robin and Linda Williams, no stranger to public radio, from Prairie Home Companion from time to time. And we'll be leading with, we haven't picked the songs yet, but great songs from all sorts of genre. And the lyrics are printed in the book and people, the whole audience sings along. And it's a great thing. That's my next peak in the mountain range that is my life. And then I'm going to start working on that next album, which is going to be some bluesy songs. And
this is why it's hard to pigeonhole, like to describe you as a musician.
That's what I am. I do music, and it's a big world out there of music, and I have a few little campgrounds that I like to visit.
Well, you can visit WMUK anytime.
Oh, thanks for having me today.
Thank you.